You're listening to the WFYI Weekly News Podcast for Friday, February 12, 2016. I'm Christopher Ayers. This week, what effect will the death of LGBT rights legislation have on this fall's statewide elections?
I think the time for inching forward is over.
A report on a promising cancer treatment being developed in the Hoosier State.
If I can save one more life because of what I've been through, it's all worth it.
And can a small town like Frankfort, Indiana, support a local arts guild? Those stories and more are coming up. Please stay tuned. First this week, the abrupt death of legislation aimed at balancing religious freedom with civil rights extensions for gay, lesbian, and bisexual Hoosiers left many surprised and disappointed. Fingers started pointing almost immediately as advocates in the debate sought to assign blame. As Indiana Public Broadcasting's Drew Dottolin reports, that finger-pointing could have a ripple effect on this year's elections, as people on both sides of the issue begin looking ahead to the fall.
Immediately after Senate Republican leaders announced their LGBT bill wouldn't advance, their talk shifted to the future. Senate President Pro Tem David Long says LGBT protections in Indiana are inevitable, and says the hours of testimony and discussion lawmakers heard this session represent significant progress toward that goal. But progress isn't enough for some.
I think the time for inching forward is over. There was a really easy way, and there still remains, I should point out, a really easy way to solve this problem.
That's Peter Hanscom from Indiana Competes, a nonpartisan group representing 450 businesses around the state that support a non-discrimination bill. Hanscom says while they thought the Senate bill had flaws, they wanted it to advance to at least keep the conversation going. But American Family Association of Indiana Executive Director Micah Clark says that conversation is hurting Indiana's reputation. He argues the problem it seeks to solve simply doesn't exist.
I mean, is there mistreatment of people? Sure. Everybody's mistreated, you know, of all groups at some point. There's bad people in the world. But is it worthy of a law that divides Indiana and pits people against people and hurts religious freedom? We don't think so.
The debate is one voters might weigh as they go to the polls later this year. Freedom Indiana is an organization that's been at the forefront of LGBT rights issues at the State House for the last few years. Its campaign manager, Chris Paulson, says it's a nonpartisan group, which means it won't target any specific candidates during election season.
But I think definitely we saw that, you know, 70% of Hoosiers think this should happen. So if lawmakers are listening to their constituents, then I think it will have an effect in the elections, yes.
Hanscom says the same, but notes many of the businesses aligned with Indiana Competes have their own political operations and make campaign donations. Some on the other side are worried certain legislators could be targeted, but Clark brushes off the possibility. He says, for better or for worse, that's the way the process works. Governor Mike Pence, set to run for re-election against Democratic nominee John Gregg, has been criticized for his hardline stance on the issue. Pence vowed in his State of the State address not to support any bill that diminishes religious freedom. Former House Democratic floor leader and former Bloomington Mayor Mark Cruzan says it's not just the governor's stance, but the way he's handled communicating that stance that could cost him votes.
When we have a governor who went on national television and ended up embarrassing the state of Indiana to a point where it's costing us our reputation, but also costing us in our pocketbooks, that's a problem.
Cruzan is referring to Pence's appearance on ABC's This Week with George Stephanopoulos last year, where many say Pence blundered his defense of the state's Religious Freedom Restoration Act, a controversy that ultimately led to the non-discrimination bill this year. Former Indiana Republican Party spokesman Pete Seat says this year's debate didn't have the same intensity RFRA sparked last session. He says he doesn't think it's going to drive elections this cycle.
With this issue and practically any issue in the legislature, it's up to the Republicans to figure it out. The Democrats at this point in time are irrelevant. They are super minorities in both chambers, and whatever the Republican caucuses in the House and Senate determine, that will effectively be the law.
But Seat notes that doesn't mean the fight for LGBT protections will go away. He says a cultural generational divide between young and old lawmakers will simply take time, or a better designed compromise, to reconcile.
So you're seeing this cultural shift, you're seeing this dynamic that hasn't necessarily taken hold here in Indiana to the extent that it has on the coasts, let's say, but people are looking to it.
Seat says shifts like these take place over the course of months, years, and sometimes decades. Lawmakers say they're getting there, but for some, Hanscom says the bill is already past due.
Words don't fix this problem. Action is what fixes this problem. And for the hundreds of thousands of LGBT Hoosiers who can still be legally fired from their job, denied access to housing, or kicked out of a public place, the idea that we had a discussion about it means absolutely nothing to them.
For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Drew Dodlin at the State House.
All four pre-K and kindergarten classes at IPS Montessori School 87 had a special guest visit their classrooms recently, marking a special day. As WFYI's Lee DeNoon reports, it was a celebration of mutual admiration.
It's the 100th day at school.
100th day in school today?
Yes!
Oh. That's John Mance Calloway, affectionately known as Mr. Mancy, speaking to the kids in room 100 of the Near West Side School. The room's doorway is festively decorated with colorful streamers as the kids celebrate all things 100, including the World War II veteran.
What's my name?
Mr. Mancy!
Thank you. I can't think of all your names, but hi, kids.
Hi!
I'm 100 and a few days over that. And happy. You know, you guys are happy too, right?
Yes!
Montessori schools are known for their hands-on, tactile teaching. Kids explore concepts by using their hands, holding, counting, and gluing objects to paper. 100 marshmallows, 100 gummy bears, 100 small toy pieces. The hallways at School 87 are lined with artwork of how the youngsters think they'll look when they're 100. They drew faces on crumpled construction paper to illustrate wrinkles and use cotton balls to show their white hair.
You want to ask him your question?
How did you stay to be 100?
What's your secret?
Oh, my secret is my trust in God.
Trust in God?
There's one thing I forgot to tell you. I don't smoke and I don't drink. Okay?
Hey, Miss Nessie, do you like to dance?
Yes, I like to dance when I can.
And you want to have a dance party?
Kennedy, explain to him what our dance parties are.
We only can dance. No running, no playing tag, and... If you do, you have to sit out.
And no break dancing.
Never at 100, you don't break dance.
But they have all learned to count to 100.
98, 99, 100.
The children present their centenarian guest with an exceptionally large handmade birthday card.
And that is from all of the preschool and kindergartners in our school. They all signed.
Thank
you
for all the kids, okay? Thank you very much. I keep this. I know you all now. I'll tell you his name.
He's Eli.
For Mr. Mancy, friendship is ageless. 490.1 WFYI News, I'm Lee DeNoon, Indianapolis.
More than 1 million people in the United States will get cancer this year, and doctors are treating a growing number of these patients with immunotherapy, a method that works a lot like a vaccine. Around 30 different immunotherapy medicines are now FDA approved, and a majority of them in just the last 4 years. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Jill Sheridan reports on work being done in Indiana to help develop this emerging treatment.
And he said, it really is an amazing drug.
This is Monticello resident Dennis O'Brien recounting a conversation with his doctor.
Because it stimulates your immune system into saying something in your body is foreign that shouldn't be here.
They had this conversation after O'Brien's stage 4 lung cancer had mutated and chemotherapy no longer worked. His doctor suggested something he'd never heard of before. Immunotherapy.
But he said it's nothing different than when you were a child and had mumps or measles or chicken pox.
So chemotherapy kills the cancer, but immunotherapy tells the body to fight it. O'Brien is now part of a clinical trial at the Indiana University Simon Cancer Center in Indianapolis.
But this newly available treatment isn't really that new, says IU Health medical oncologist and associate professor Dr. Ted Logan.
So this is the article that I hand out to residents when they ask me what the heck I'm doing.
Over 100 years ago, bone surgeon William Coley began researching cancer after one of his patients died from it.
And this is his first paper from 1893.
He found evidence of a tumor shrinking after a patient came down with a serious infection, so he tried injecting bacteria into patients, and in one case, a tumor disappeared forever.
This, in my judgment, is where immunotherapy starts in this country.
But then radiation came along, and immunotherapy fell by the wayside. Until recently, a number of breakthroughs in the last couple of decades resurrected medical and research interest, and it's working well for many patients who are not responding to other therapies.
Some of them have complete responses that can last years.
But a lot of questions remain to be answered, like why it works on some types of cancer and not others. Indianapolis-based Eli Lilly is on the front lines of development and has helped manufacture three of the new medicines. Dr. Richard Gaynor, Senior VP of Oncology Development and Medical Affairs at Lilly, says immunotherapy is changing the way doctors fight cancer, but he stops at saying cure.
We never like to use the term cure because, you know, cancer can occur and recur later on. I think what we're learning is the immune system is really important. The other thing we've learned that that's not going to be sufficient.
Gaynor sees the future of cancer treatment in a combination approach using cell-based therapy, personalized genetic medicine, and vaccines. Or even combining chemotherapy and immunotherapy, two treatments that have worked for Dennis O'Brien, who just received his 25th cycle of immune infusion therapy in Indianapolis. The clinical trial he's in has over 700 participants. Only about 5% have had the response rate that O'Brien has, and on his last scan, they could hardly make out the tumor. O'Brien hopes his results will lead to more answers.
To help more people beat cancer. If you want to call me a guinea pig, I don't care. But if I can save one more life because of what I've been through, it's all worth it.
There are now over 83 clinical trials open nationwide, and a growing number of Indiana oncologists are offering FDA-approved immunotherapy medicines. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Jill Sheridan.
A group in Frankfort, Indiana, a small town about 25 miles southeast of Lafayette, is hoping to establish an arts guild there, just 2 years after the county's first art gallery opened. It's an attempt by some in the community to improve the quality of life in the diverse town of 16,000. But as Indiana Public Broadcasting's Charlotte Tuggle reports, even some supporters of the project wonder if there's enough elbow grease in a small community like Frankfort to get such a project off the ground.
He sculpts all of the mouths. He uses some mixed media.
Wendy Hall owns the Studio 6 Art Gallery in downtown Frankfort. It's a small room filled with soup cans turned into gnarled, toothy monster mouths and a colorful, collage-like portrait of Jimi Hendrix hanging above a bin of black and white photography. There's not yet a sign above the door, but the place is growing. Studio 6 is currently the only independent gallery in Clinton County, but Hall hopes to change that. She's leading a movement to unify artists in the rural area by creating the Clinton County Arts Guild.
People come to me and they say, well, you know, I'm not really familiar with art. And it kind of makes me sad to hear that because people don't understand that it comes down to the clothing that you choose, the type of car that you drive. Everything is an art. You make creative choices every day.
Hall says especially in a rural community, a lot of people don't go out and seek inspiration, so she's trying to bring it to them. An early ally of the Guild is the Frankfort Public Library, which holds its own art events across town. But Arts and Education Manager Anna Lake says it's not a competition. She and Hall will share contacts and tell people about each other's programs.
Any way that we can be involved in a community organization is good for us as well as the Arts Guild.
So far, Guild members have elected officers, planned multiple events, discussed how to pull more artists into the organization, and begun the process of applying for official nonprofit status. Hall says right now the Guild is a subsidiary of the Frankfort Main Street Project, a program that puts on events to promote different parts of the community. But artists tell her they'd rather be an independent unit With nonprofit status, the Guild would be able to apply for grant money. Tippecanoe Arts Federation Regional Services Director Katie Morrison, who knows Hall as TAF's Clinton County representative, advised them to be persistent. Morrison says the desire to make communities attractive is making art initiatives like the Guild bounce back.
I think that this is actually the perfect time because there's an increasing level of public awareness about the importance of quality of life in Indiana and especially in rural communities.
Morrison says the Guild faces a number of challenges, from trying to make the community more inclusive to counseling artists how to sell art locally when big box stores show up and getting young people interested. Arts Guild Secretary Crystal Reichert and Treasurer Sheila Kaplinger say one of their primary concerns is building support for the organization and not just for the art.
It seems like, you know, people don't want to put in the work. You know, they like doing the art, but they don't want to put in the work to, like, sell themselves or convince other people. And some people just don't want to share themselves, or they don't know how.
They don't know how to get their names out there and get people to come see their stuff, you know.
Indiana Arts Commission Executive Director Louis Rickey says art guilds survive when their members focus on quality of life and tourism in small towns. Rickey says despite the arts being taken out of many school systems, he believes attitudes statewide are promising.
On a statewide level toward the art, which I think is actually quite supportive and quite energized in many ways, I just think that's part of the reality.
Back at her studio in Frankfurt, Wendy Hall says positive feelings have been growing about the Arts Guild there. She thinks once skeptics see Studio 6 and hear more about what the Guild will do, they'll pledge their support.
People have been really excited. As far as the Guild goes, they're excited that we're going to have shows downtown, and a lot of the vacant spaces that you see coming in to downtown are going to be full of their artwork, and that excites them.
The Clinton County Arts Guild plans to have an art walk in May as its first large-scale show. For Indiana Public Broadcasting, I'm Charlotte Tuggle in West Lafayette.
That's it for this edition of the WFYI Weekly News Podcast. You can follow us online at WFYI.org, on Twitter at WFYI News, and on Facebook, just search WFYI. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. You can stream it on the web at SoundCloud. Just search WFYI there as well. This podcast is a production of WFYI News. The stories you hear on this podcast come from Indiana Public Broadcasting stations. It was produced at 90.1 WFYI Public Radio Studios, located on North Meridian Street in the heart of the Circle City, Indianapolis. I'm Christopher Ayers. Thanks for listening.